blessings to all this morning. Send you Christian greetings. Greetings from the church in Farmington. We enjoy visitors to come and see us. We enjoy when the minister here come and preach for us. So I guess the time has come to say a favor back. Finding it a very fitting devotional for the message, and that the word of Jesus is something I want to start this message with. And we certainly can take it as specific instructions for us because of who Jesus is. The other thing I found very interesting in the Sunday school this morning was going right down the line of some things I wanted to say, and I understand from listening to the men that there's some fairly strong opinions on the subject. So I hope I don't tread all over you. I guess I'll give some of my opinions, and maybe we can discuss it afterwards. As we know, if you're blindfolded, the elephant feels different from different directions. Sometimes, you know, his leg feels like a tree and his trunk feels like a snake and these kind of things. So maybe some of these subjects are that way. One person sees it from this direction, another one from this direction, and we might both be right. Hopefully we're not both wrong. As we think about the elections coming up, probably there's some emotional involvement, maybe for some of you. For others, probably less. But I would like to encourage us this morning that it's probably less is better. Getting caught up in the political things can be exciting, can be, again, opinionated this way, that way. So I guess this morning I have a political message. So if anybody here is a Democrat, I'm preaching to you today. If you're Republican, I'm preaching to you too. But I'm going to be introducing a better way than Democrats and Republicans. And I'm sure you're aware of the better way. I've entitled the message, "The Danger of Earthly Political Interest," not involvement, "The Danger of Over-Interest," lest our hearts start getting stolen away with plans and ideas that don't belong to us. Don't belong to us. Political parties are formed for one reason. Well, it's probably a bigger answer than that, but political parties have a goal to improve or preserve a high quality of life for those that adhere to the same ideas. Is that right? What political party has anything else in mind but better for me and mine? Better for us. It's in our best interest for us. Wouldn't Americans in general say that it is in our best interest to make decisions worldwide for the interest of the American people? Isn't that number one? This is the goal, in general. Each country tries to improve or maintain what's best for us. And in a way, we certainly want what's best for our families. Number one, I hope, spiritually, we want what's best for our families. Number two, we definitely want to take care of them in a material way, too. Let's turn to Acts 1:6 as a springboard for starting this. I'm going to wander around in different passages, different verses here and there, but I have a lot of things to say that aren't necessarily straight from the Bible, but that involves some history that I want to bring out this morning. But for a beginning, we want to turn to Acts 1, starting in verse 6. This is right before the ascension. Jesus' time on earth is done. They're gathered together out there on the hill. Acts 1, verse 6. When they therefore were come together, they asked of him, saying, Lord, wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom to Israel? Think about that. Is that a political statement? Once more, will we have our country the way we want it for the best of us? That's the question, really. Israel is the dearest country to their heart. They're Israelites. Lord, will you once more put us back into the glory days of David and Solomon, when we were the rulers of our universe, this part of the globe was ours, and we were king? This is the question. Let's look at the answer. And he said unto them, it is not for you to know the times or the seasons which the Father hath put in his own power. In other words, it's not for you to worry about those kind of things, seasons and times and maybe reasons and results and things that you really cannot understand. But ye shall receive power after that the Holy Ghost is come upon you, and ye shall be witnesses, not for Israel, not for a national interest, but witnesses unto me, both in Jerusalem and in all Judea and in Samaria, and unto the uttermost part of the earth. This is what's important for you. Forget the politics. I have a mission that supersedes beyond Jerusalem, beyond Judea, everywhere. And it's your calling. This is Christian politics. Not for the interest of a country, but for the interest of the Master. There's been a lot of political parties. There's even a Christian Freedom Party in America now, I understand, formed in 2004. You don't hear much of it. Obviously, it's very small. Christian Freedom Party. Sounds like one I could be part of. True Christian Freedom. We all want that. But I find it very interesting as we look at this thing that in politics, it's usually a group of people to make decisions collectively. It's not about dictatorship in general, although we realize the Communist Party has done some of that. But it's made up of many people. In Romania, there are many, many parties. I can't even remember them all. I wrote a bunch of them down. There's the National Liberal Party. There's the National Union for the Advancement of Romania. There's the Social Democratic Party. There's the Conservative Party. There's the Democratic Liberal Party and the Democratic Union of Hungarians, which, of course, is for the good of the Hungarian population that lives in Romania. The rest of the people aren't too excited about that party. It doesn't affect them. Once more, everyone's for their own side. Some are known for their conservative liberalism, and others are known for their liberal conservatism. And that leaves me pretty confused. Am I a liberal conservative or conservative liberal? Anyway, these things go on and on and on. And, of course, they have to form coalitions and team together sometimes to get anywhere because they're so splintered in so many different directions that one alone will generally not be able to get most of the public on their side. But I want to present this morning the Christian Party with Christ as its leader. And again, because any other party has self-interest. Not that we're not interested in ourselves, but the meaning of the word selfish is to be overly concerned with oneself. And the Bible calls us to be looking at others as better than ourselves, laying down our lives for the brethren. These aren't necessarily good political slogans, but it's our calling. And in so many ways, our calling is an exact opposite of human nature, therefore an exact opposite of what most people are pushing for in this world. Therefore, it's the exact opposite of the goals of most political parties. And there's such a danger that our mind and our allegiance and our statement starts rallying up behind some political movement, when in the end, their goals and our goals are so vastly different. Let's don't waste our energy, time, or money on promoting anything political. we're to be focused, number one, on the great commandment, loving God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and loving our neighbor as ourselves. And if we're truly busy filling that to its fullest, I think we will understand that God holds in His hand the heart of the king, as the Bible says, and that He turns things as He wishes to bring about things that He is desiring, and He also allows some things to happen. The other thing we have to realize is that the world lies in the power of Satan. Excuse me. And that many things that happen are not God's will, but He allows it. We simply pray that God works through situations like that to bring about His will. When Job was struck down, was that a plan of God to bring hardship into his life? It really wasn't. God was blessing him. And when it was suggested that Job would be unfaithful if he lost, God was willing for the test to happen, but did not instigate it, did not plan it, and did not bring it about. Read it carefully. That was the hand of Satan that killed all his servants. The hand of Satan that took his children, and the hand of Satan that took all his wealth away and caused his sickness. So God sees right now the famine in Somalia and all the other problems, the unrest in various parts of the world. And you know, it's really not because of a lack of some political program that these things are happening. There's things behind the scenes we do not understand, and if we get too excited about trying to fix these things through political means and governments, more than likely, I think we're going to end up running right against something that God was trying to do or planning or taking care of all along His own way. It's way beyond us, so I think we shouldn't take things upon ourselves that are not meant for us. But we have our calling. We're to witness for Him in all the earth. That includes Strawberry, Arkansas. And we see people get so involved, bumper stickers and rallies and, oh, we just have to get on this side. We just have to support that side. We vote for this, we vote for that. All because everybody has the idea that we know what's best for us and we want what's best for us. Mark 4, 18 and 19, two verses I want to quickly read. If you don't want to turn to every time I pick out one verse and want to read that, I don't feel obligated, but our focus again is love. And when the parable of the sower is explained, Mark 4:18, and these are they which are sown among thorns, such as hear the word, and the cares of this world, or politics, or making a living, and the deceitfulness of riches, having plenty in abundance, and the lust of other things, entering in, choke the word, and it becometh unfruitful. Again, sidetracked by all these other things. As he said in Matthew, you cannot serve two masters. Either love the one, hate the other. You're either faithful to the one, faithful to the other. And I don't think we can be real excited about politics, whether it's national or local or anything, and still be faithful to our calling to God. I think we have to allow things to happen as they will and make sure that we carry out what our job is. I want to give you one dreadful example from history of an over interest in politics and which led to involvement. It was a true disaster for the church. A number of years ago, I had an overnight stay in Germany, and I went to look up a little town that one of my ancestors came from. And I was going around and seeing a few sites, with a distant cousin of mine that still lived there. And he knew I was Mennonite. He wasn't. So he took me to see a small Mennonite church. And it was unlocked, and we went inside. I think the auditorium was smaller than this one. But this had been a Mennonite church from before World War I until this present day. I think there was even a Menace Simmons Street or Boulevard not far from there. This is interesting. And we walked in there and looked around. It was the middle of the week. Nobody else was there. And there on the one wall, there was a plaque of all their members and family people that had died fighting in World War I from their church. And on the other wall was a plaque that had all the people from World War II. And we have these Mennonites who were sending their boys to war for the last two world wars already, still calling themselves Mennonites. And it's like, how can this happen? How can this be? Their background was actually Dutch. They were Dutch Mennonites, I guess, that had settled in Germany from in some of those parts. They were wealthy. They were conservative. In what sense of the word? They were ready for the country to be strong and to serve its own self-interest. And the result of all that was that they became ardent Nazis. They were willing to lay down Bible teaching because they were so enthused about what their country was doing and what their country should attain to. During World War II, the declaration was made. I'm going to read a paragraph here. If the providence has so willed that the people cannot be spared this fight, then I can only be grateful that it entrusted me with the leadership of this historic struggle. The people and their soldiers are working and fighting today, not only for the present, but also for the coming, nay, the most distant generations. The Creator has imposed a historical revision on a unique scale upon us. Could that have been said by an American? Probably could have. We have to go and stop this evil in the world. But this is actually part of the Declaration of War on the United States, December the 11th, 1941, spoken by Hitler. Let me read it again and put in a few words I left out. If the providence has so willed that the German people cannot be spared this fight, then I can only be grateful that it entrusted me with the leadership of this historic struggle. The people, or the German people, and their soldiers are working and fighting today, not only for the present, but also for the coming, nay, the most distant generations. The Creator has imposed a historical revision on a unique scale upon us. He also said, in view of the great danger, I can only thank God that He enlightened me at the proper time and that He gave me the strength to do what had to be done. Words of Hitler. Political statements and announcements and speeches, be they by our president or someone else's president, can sound so alive and exciting and uplifting. The things we have to do, thank God for the strength to do them. But really, I want to throw away the idea that America is a Christian nation or a Christian government. Yes, it has a lot of Christians. It has a lot of people that believe in God. But what is a Christian? Christian is a follower of Christ, and some of his strongest statements are, love your enemies. Now, which political government can call itself Christian and maintain an army to destroy their enemies? They immediately are leaving Christian teaching and Christianity. Yes, maybe God is blessing some countries more than others. We don't know why. Where's the outcome finally? We don't know. But lest we get sidetracked, as bad as our brothers in Germany did, politics is out there. And my call to be a Christian needs to be right here. A real Christian, not a political Christian. And we see signs of patriotism everywhere, and many churches would support it. Support our troops. Or even on church signs, pray for our troops. Stop terrorism. There's all kinds of signs and things everywhere. And I want to ask, what is a troop? Who are our troops? The people that are trained to inflict pain, suffering, and death on the enemy. Exactly what Christ told us not to do. It gets so confusing when we look at Christian candidates and their Christian statements, and they're still trying to kill people. There was a recent candidate for Congress in the mid-elections a couple years ago here. One of his statements was that they should, he's all for treating terrorists like the enemies they are. Well, I agree. Let's treat terrorists like the enemies they are. What does our rule book say about enemies? Love them. Pray for them. Do good to them. Even when they sabotage you and use you painfully. Love them. Pray for them. Do good to them. It's not what the political man had in mind. But that's where we can see the complete departure of their world and our world. Love your enemies. John Ashcroft was first governor in Missouri a number of years, and a churchman. I don't need to comment on that a lot further. But even the press that likes to print news thought, this is kind of strange. This man claims to be a Christian, and yet he's trying to... Was he running for president back then? Or talking about it? Or maybe it was just in his race for governor. I believe he was going for president. I'm not sure. So the press, the newspaper people, they come to some of his supporters in the campaign and they said, what will happen if, for the good of the country, John would be asked to do something against the Bible? He's claiming to be a biblical Christian. What if the needs of the country and his convictions part ways? What will he do? And they said, well, John Ashcroft has never been known to deviate from what's best for the country. In other words, don't worry about it. He'll do his job. Does that mean he might have to lay aside the Bible sometimes as a president? It's interesting, when a president is brought into office, they still put his hand on the Bible and say, swear that you will uphold what? The teachings of this book? No. Their interest is America. Our interest has to be higher than that. And it's so easy. I find myself, you read a statement, you watch the news, it is so easy not to have a feeling of pride when our military solved the problem. Yet, how did they do that? Force. Killing. People dying. Every person, I believe, that grows up in any country has to be careful that their allegiance to God is not somehow brought down in their allegiance for their own country. I want to throw a few figures out. I might write one or two of the board. These figures change constantly, so no, this is not 100% accurate. But according to some figures, the world population is 6 billion plus. China has 1.3 plus. India has 1.1 $1 billion. We only have $320 million, which is significantly less. This might make it a little easier. China has 19% of the people in this world. This is a rough figure. India has 17%. And here in the USA, we have about 5% of the world's population.
So we're a minority. We're certainly a few compared to the rest of the world. 5%. Here's some startling facts. And again, facts come from different organizations. And over time, these facts can change. But here's some facts that I read. Almost half, over 3 billion people, live on less than $2.50 per day. What do you make per hour? Half of those people are living on less than $2.50 per day. 80% of humanity lives on less than $10 a day. 80% lives on less than $10 a day. In 2007, in the U.S., the average man with full-time work made $45,000 per year. $45,000 per year. Does this start putting in perspective who's poor and who's rich? I don't think the figures can tell us anything other than the fact that we are among the rich. I heard a figure in Sunday school this morning that said top 10%. Yeah, I think we're in the top 10%, top 15% of the riches in this world are controlled and enjoyed by us Americans. We grew up here and we think we're normal. We're not. We are not normal. We are not average. We are way, way, way beyond world average in things we control, things we have, the life we live, hot showers, flip a switch, it just comes out of the wall. I have one too. I'm not saying we shouldn't. But I want us to get a perspective of who is ferociously blessed, way beyond who has and who doesn't have. So in politics, this brings up things like the political issue of immigration. What should we do with all these Mexicans that come over our borders and want to take our jobs and live off of our system? Let's just pack them up and send them home. This is for us. This is for Americans. Right? Is that truly the way a Christian should look at an illegal Mexican? What are we trying to preserve again? Our top 15% of good living? Don't let anybody else in. I want this for me. Imagine a fellowship meal where we get our food and we put it on our table. And it's for us to sit here and eat and enjoy this. And here comes a Mexican. Wait a minute. This is for us. This is our food. We worked for this. It's for us. Go away. Go home. Would we do that? Of course not. How do we do it when we're ready to send him back to his country where the wages are pitiful? Because we're trying to preserve our 15% lifestyle. What else is it? What if my brother was down there, a legal Mexican, trying to come to the United States? Would I have a heart to let him come up here and share in the good life we have? Well, which one of you wouldn't? What's the difference? We're all sons of Adam. We're all created in the likeness of God. And that's why we mayn't let political agendas start swaying our thinking of how we look at people in the world. Whether it's legal or illegal or what we're trying to preserve, the great American lifestyle, Yeah. I imagine the people on top of the pile would like to preserve everything they have. Who wants to go live without showers and food? So we want to say, keep him out, keep him out. And tomorrow he dies, and tomorrow I die, and we both arrive at the New Jerusalem. Can we sit down at the same table together? Welcome, brother, come in. I wouldn't let you in down there, but you can come in here. Will he let me in there? Is he comfortable sitting beside me at the Last Supper, the Great Supper? Now, how do we think about those kind of things? The true Christian political position is just not in touch with any other political party out there. None. None. Not one. I don't care if you call it conservative American. I don't care what you call it. Our position as Christians does not mesh one bit with what's going on in this world. And that's why I'm saying we have to leave those kind of things aside in order for us to attain what Christ said. Go be witnesses for me. It's not of your interest when God's restoring what or preserving what for who. You go witness for me everywhere. 1 John 3:17 says, if we see our brother in need and we don't share, how dwells the love of God in him? Indeed, how is it? In Luke 16:20, we have the rich man and Lazarus, and our heart always goes out to Lazarus. Always the poor man, that cruel rich man, sitting there eating his food and not paying any attention to the poor man, sick, without food. How could he? How can he? It's just when you don't see the poor man laying at your gate, you don't think about him. When they're across the ocean, out of sight, out of mind, we happily go about our business. Here's another one that hits home oftentimes. Can with me, can with anybody. Pick up a pair of shoes at Walmart. What do you see? Made in where? China. Made in China. Do we blame China for exporting goods when they have 19% of the world's population to feed? They better do something. Do we see them as competition? Well, yeah, they can be. I'm in the furniture business, and they send furniture over here, so I guess they're competing with me like other people do, other Americans too. Should I be aggravated that the Chinese send buy wood, buy oak logs from America, ship them over there, turn them into nice furniture, and ship them all the way back and compete with me on a dollar level that is true competition? Let them do it. Let them do whatever they can. How do I feel about that? Should a Christian be upset? Should we strive to keep our jobs at home? Keep our business at home. A few more statistics. In 2009, been several years ago, and I don't know how accurate these statistics are, but the country person in China earned about $752 per year. The factory worker earned $1,347, considerably better. He made over $1,000 every year working in a factory in China, making some of that furniture and our shoes. $1,347. Some of the city people were earning up over $2,000, an average of $2,700 for the city dweller. And I understand, and we talked about it, it came up in Sunday school a little bit, there's things like war and corruption that keep people poor. There's also things like drought that nobody planned. Right now in Somalia, there's a terrible drought happening. And I'm glad to hear that CAM is there and they need more funds to help feed those people. There's one case I think we can truly not feel bad about putting food directly in a person's mouth. They cannot. It's a
support their own. And there's things like corruption. In Romania, I saw corruption. In Moldova, I saw, I think, more corruption yet. And sometimes it's that that keeps people poor. But finally, doesn't our heart go out to the individual that's under the corrupt system who could have a better life if he had a better system over him? Let me give you an example. We lived in Moldova for 3 years, working with a small church group there. There was a sister in our church there. She's single, has a six-year-old daughter, lives at home with her father and a younger sister, but they're both of age. Father has a small pension. This sister, Ina, found a job at the local daycare center. It's a kindergarten, but they run it almost like a daycare. It's a left door from the communist days. She was able to get a job there, and she felt so blessed. Right here in our own village, she could walk to work. And such good pay. She was getting $100 a month. So happy to have a job and make $100 a month. It's just such a blessing. And she said, you know, we have everything we need. We just, you know, we can't complain. There was no hot shower in the house. There was no running water in the house, period. The water came out of a well in the courtyard and you had to crank it up and carry it in by the bucketful. We had everything we needed. They had food. They had some firewood to stay warm. They did gardening. And she had a job, made $100 a month. And she was satisfied. No car. They had a horse. Everything we needed. And there she was, living under a corrupt government that Romania is known as the poorest country in Europe, at least they were 2 years ago. Poorest country in Europe. And I don't doubt one bit that mismanagement and corruption is part of their problem. But what's Ina supposed to do about that? Is she responsible? No. What's she supposed to do? She does what she can, and she's thankful to God. If I were a missionary living in China, working with the church, and we had Chinese brethren in the church, and one of them would say, you know what? There's an opening down at the factory. Should I take it? What would you tell them? No. We don't need any more of that plastic junk in there. Well, of course. Go get an honest job. Do what you can. Feed your family however you can. Would I tell him that his government is corrupt and they're suppressing the people and we really don't want to buy the products that come from here? We just can't support that evil system. So what shall I do, he could say. Just hope the brothers in America send money so I can buy food? Or should I work what I can and make what I can? I think we'd all agree. Every little Chinese boy likes to eat as well as my little boys. Every child there, every mother, every father wants a decent life. And they'll be happy with a whole lot less than what we're making. 1 Thessalonians 4 tells us to work. And it's good for them as well as good for us. First Thessalonians 4:11-12. And that ye study to be quiet, to do your own business, to work with your own hands as we command you, that ye may walk honestly toward them that are without, and that you may have lack of nothing. I think it's so much better when someone can have a job rather than just be handed food by a richer brother. And I think it's so much better that the Chinese can make shoes and live, than to sit back and beg the church in America to feed them. So as I, as a Christian, should I really be that aggravated that we have a lot of Chinese products? Hey, there's a lot of Chinese in this world. Almost one out of five people in this world is Chinese. They have to do something. And what am I trying to protect? American jobs? Our top 15% position in the world? Proverbs 19:17 says, "He that hath pity on the poor lends to the Lord." God sees all the suffering that's happening. And there's a verse that says, His love is perfected through us. How is God's love perfected through us? When I'm willing to stand in the gap between food that's grown and a person that can't reach it, and I'm helping, whether it's jobs or food or whatever it might be, I really feel we need to be involved in lessening the suffering in this world. And that means a definite disconnection from American politics, who are doing things for the American lifestyle. That same man that was running for Congress that I mentioned a while back, talking about treating enemies, terrorists, like the enemies they are, he also made some statements about, this is not the America that my parents wanted for their children. It's not the America today that I want for my children. What more do we want? If we're already in the top 15% and we got to have more and better. Of course, he was slamming the current political position, trying to lift himself. But with the idea that we have to be able to do better than this for our families, really. I wonder if he needs to take an international trip, spend a little time abroad. Open thy mouth, judge right, and plead the cause of the poor and needy. Again, I think we need to tone down our interest in worldly politics and focus on true Christian politics. CEM was mentioned in our devotions this morning, or in our Sunday school class, and I think they have many good projects around the world. The last one that I talked to anyone about there with the Somalia thing was they came up with a plan to go over there, taking our donations. There's no way to give these people jobs. It's huge refugee camps. Thousands of people have flooded over the border into a neighboring country that does allow foreigners to come in better than Somalia does. And they looked at the situation, and I think they came up with a very wise idea. Time will prove whether it works or not. Here's people competing for water and food. Here's a herdsman with animals that's competing with the water that the people are drinking, and he has no good market anymore. But these people are hungry. Take money, buy his animals, pay the butcher, and give the fresh meat, no canning costs, no preserving, no freezing, fresh meat straight to the refugees to eat. Well, it's a wonderful direct thing. Buy from the guy that has the animals and slaughter, give it to the hungry. And he said, we're going to try it. If it works, fine. If it doesn't, we'll try something else. I applaud that. I applaud them going over there and trying something with all those thousands of people that are hungry. That takes money. Who should pay for that? The Chinese? Got a phone call yesterday. I think it was yesterday. I still own a small hardware store in Moldova. General store, not a hardware store. And Ina's sister, incidentally, the other girl, she works there. She's in her, was she 30? She's
She said, you know, we just got a folder in the mail from Romania in the beside the still waters that's talking about the famine in Africa. Do you think maybe the store could donate a little bit of money, you know? Not a lot, but if everybody gives a little, it'll surely make a difference. There's still no running water in their house. But she was thinking of someone that was a lot worse off than them. I said, sure. She suggested an amount. I said, yeah, I think we could do that. I think we should do that. Wasn't a lot. And the law there does allow for stores to donate to worthy causes. She thought, well, maybe we could do that. The world is out there, and we're here. And today there are so many opportunities to give. Even staying in conservative Mennonite organizations, whether it's drilling wells in famine areas or helping out with Christian Aid or taking Bibles to China, there's so many possibilities, even among people that we are comfortable working with. What's holding us back? I know we have obligations, financial obligations, but let's don't let our businesses and our farms and our lives just absorb everything for me and mine. As a personal challenge, I would like to say this. Writing a check is sometimes the easiest thing. You can control that, the amount you want, whatever's comfortable, whatever works, without stressing the budget. What about your time? Go give some time somewhere. Maybe it's just here in the county. There's worthy needs here too. Disasters. New Orleans. Tornadoes. Gather up the boys. Go put in a few days. There's things the sisters can do to send help to those places also. I think when we get personally involved, it's so much more fulfilling, and we understand so much better than simply sending some money. The money is necessary. I'm not saying that. There's no way to help those people in Somalia without money. But I think for us to catch a vision beyond houses, pickup trucks, hunting trips, and all the good things we enjoy, we have to have a Christian political worldview. We're all created in the image of God, and some of our brothers are suffering. Most of them are poor compared to our lifestyle. Who should help? It's not us. Ephesians 4:28. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, the things which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Work to give. I want to close this with a quote written by Nana Simmons. You've probably heard it often. True evangelical faith cannot lie dormant. It clothes the naked. It feeds the hungry. It comforts the sorrowful. It shelters the destitute. It serves those that harm it. It binds up that which is wounded. It has become all things to all people. May that be our vision. May that be our drive. Back to politics. Who's going to win the election? Is Obama going to get in again? Is it time for a Republican in there? You know what? I don't really care. I'm letting that up to God. Our calling is waiting, and all my energy and time cannot go around with American politics. Let's move on.